Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
So it's the end of one awful year and the beginning of a new one, and we wanted to look back on some of our favorite conversations from this past year, and you might notice a theme here. We start off with Christy Smith, who spoke to us just as she was exiting as Apple's diversity chief, and we talked to her about representation in the workforce, and how COVID could be impacting the trajectory of diversity in general. Here's part of that conversation.
I wanted to ask you, what are your beliefs as to where diversity ought to be in the workplace, you know, 5 to 10 years from now? What's your hope, but also as you cover and focus on this area very closely, what do you actually expect to happen in terms of our approach? And I imagine, frankly, even, you know, we're talking now on June 17th. I frankly think that if I would have asked you this question a month ago, you might have even provided a different answer, because I think there's a lot of momentum, you know, in favor of greater diversity and representation in the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the most obvious answer is exactly what you just said, which is increased representation, not only in the boardroom, but the executive leadership team and all the way down through the organization, right? I think that what is more and equally as important is that we need to, in corporations, fundamentally redefine what we mean by inclusion and diversity and look at culture, leadership expectations and behaviors, accountability structures. And we also need to see ourselves, I mean, my wish is that we begin to see the ecosystem that defines long-term success for businesses and what will ultimately distinguish those great companies that exist out there to today. Right. And I think that is what are the things that make those great? I think, again, that is how do we look at talent? How do we develop talent? How do we bring talent in? How do we advance talent? All of these kinds of things, and that our organizations allow for equal opportunity, frankly, for moving up within organizations and representation being the lag indicator of that.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I would hope that you're right. And I think that you're probably well-informed enough that if you're saying it, there's a very good chance that that's the direction we're going. I mean, I think that another input is obviously the coronavirus pandemic, which got me thinking that surely that has to have impacted the trajectory for diversity in general, right? I in my head, it's like it has to have impacted it. I'm just not quite sure exactly how.
Well, I think it goes to the systemic issues of, you know, racism, right? There's been a lot written about the lack of access and quality of healthcare for underrepresented minorities, especially Blacks, right? There is a lack of understanding in companies with regards to the fact that certain communities, underrepresented communities, live in family units, unlike white communities who, you know, kids grow up, move out of their families' homes and become, you know, quote unquote, self-sufficient. In the Black community, the family takes care of one another. In the Asian community, the family lives together and cares for one another. And so when you're looking at healthcare in and of itself, like we've looked at COVID, I'll say it this way. I had an interesting conversation with a leader recently where I was talking about the fact that COVID impacts the Black community disproportionately poorly, right?
Yeah.
And their response was, well, but we take care of our employees. We have great benefits, right? So we take care of our own. And I said, yes, that single employee is well taken care of, but that single employee may be providing for their entire family, right? And that extra pressure and the lack of being able to care for all or see each other differently in terms of what the representation of is everyone in the organization with their extended family or their extended social groups or communities is incredibly important as well.
On the topic of diversity and representation, another one of our favorite conversations was with Dr. Ella Bell Smith, professor of management at Dartmouth's Tuck School, an expert on the workplace as well as organizational behavior. We spoke to her in October on Kamala Harris's portrayal of Black femininity, what's in store for Black women post-2020 and post-COVID, and more. Here's some of what she had to say.
The other thing she's doing, she's also showing a model of Black femininity, of Black womanhood, that will enable people who have had no exposure or interaction with us at all to say, wow, you know, look how brilliant she is. Look at her credentials. Look how she presents herself. Check out her gig. And she's so grounded. She's so down to earth. Just a wonderful package there. This is huge. This is absolutely huge for us. And I think the imprint is going to last a long time. It's not just going to go away. When you get that stake in the ground, those images, those women, they do not disappear. We do not forget those women. No matter what side they're on, we do not forget them. We know.
So that's really helpful, because I think it's obviously great for people to look at somebody as a source of inspiration and say, listen, they might have had a different strategy, a different political ideology, but at least I can learn from this lesson. And it's something that I can imagine for myself. Going back to the kind of larger cause of having an equal playing field in corporate America for women, is it unrealistic to assume that women can unite and basically all fight for the same thing and fight for an equal seat at the table? If women are 51% of the population, surely they're not a monolith in their own views.
No, you were singing my song now. I always say, until women unite, all women unite, you're not going to see change, long-term change for any women. And I truly believe that. I think we have to widen the pot. What happens oftentimes when we think about corporate women, we only want the women at the top. If just the women in the executive suite and one level below can make it, then everybody's going to make it. Nah, that's not true. So you get the executive, which have been mostly white women, who get to those sweet jobs, and they're not that sweet. They're hard. They're working their cans off. Let's be honest about that. But the reality of it is that they don't reach down. First of all, you don't have the time. But second of all, we believe if we just make it, that we just make it does not work. We've got to start thinking about all women, particularly when you look at all women in the corporate, those women that are on your call centers that, you know, are in little offices sitting on top of each other, those women who can't take their computers and things home for maternity leave because they've got to work. We've got to think about change, not just for women at the top. Women have to think about and create, be the voice for women in organizations from the top to the very bottom. And then we've got to start doing our work to help those women who are in other industries and other niches and those women who have much less. So the net worth of an African-American woman is $500. The net worth. What do we do as women who have power, access, resources? Not maybe some of us do have equal to white men. There are those out there. How do we make a difference for those women? We just can't use our voices for elite women. We've got to begin to use our voices in a broader context for all women. And that's another thing Senator Harris does. She gives the women who are not from the elite, prestigious world, she gives them hope. She gives them the strength to continue and to move on and say, I'm going to continue to fight. That's a powerful force right there.
So I was going to ask you a question that I feel like you partially answered, because I was going to say, just wondering out loud, why Black women are continually at the bottom of the food chain and the corporate world, but they make up such a large percentage of Democratic supporters. And obviously the Democrats are one of the top two parties that we have at any given time. Often they're the number one party. Isn't there an argument to be made that they haven't made enough progress? And I don't know if the wealth disparity is most or all of it, where just if you don't have enough economic power, you can't do that much about reversing or challenging the status quo.
You can't, because you're so busy just trying to survive, particularly in the age of the coronavirus. If I'm saying like your wealth, net wealth was $500 before corona, What must it be now? When you were laid off from jobs, when you didn't have any backup and you're trying to pay how to pay rent, you're trying to figure out how to put food on your table, and the government, federal government, says, we're not going to provide any more support. And states are broke because they're trying to do it all. So the reality of it is, you've got women and family and children, women and children, particularly Black women and their children, slipping in between the cracks.
I would argue that this is, unfortunately, an argument that Black women might be heading in the wrong direction, because let's say if they're more likely to be essential workers and doing things that, like, let's say an Instacart shopper who then gets sick, God forbid, who doesn't have as much access to healthcare. This is just one of those things where there's a bit of a boulder going downhill, and there are all these different effects that maybe means we could see greater disparities in the future as opposed to heading in the right direction.
Yeah, but to head in the right direction, that's a great assumption. I'm going to call you on that. To head in the right direction, you've got to have resources. You've got to have counseling. This is not, you talk about it as if it's an individual choice. It is not an individual choice. If I don't see the resources around me, if nobody is telling me the path, and I have not seen that path before, and I don't have the money to go to community college or to pick up a trade, or I've got to work three jobs just to be sure my children can eat, all right? If I've got all this coming at me every day, I don't have the luxury to sit around and say, okay, I'm falling in a hole here. Let me see how I get myself out. You need help getting yourself out of the hole. You need to have resources.
This year, we also spoke to Victoria Montgomery Brown, co-founder and CEO of knowledge platform Big Think, about how women need to be their own champions in the workplace, what the market might be like for female entrepreneurs looking to attract funding, and why leaders need to start thinking differently heading into 2021. Here's some of my conversation with Victoria.
I believe that it still has to be a meritocracy. So the best person should get the job, whether or not they're a man or a woman. And so I think that the more women start entering senior positions in business on an ongoing basis, that will eventually change. And there will be more CEOs of corporate, of giant corporations. But I think it's also incumbent on women to put themselves forward for those positions. You know, I know that there is a hesitation sometimes with women, that I forget what the statistic is, essentially, that men are much more likely to put themselves forward for positions that they are not actually qualified for, while women are much less likely to put themselves forward for positions that they are potentially even overqualified for. And so I think that there has to be somewhat of a sea change inside women's own heads. And that's not something that men can do for them. So basically becoming more confident and putting themselves out there. So I don't know that that's a scientific answer, but I think it's much more incumbent on women to do it for themselves.
Where do you think the market will be in a few years in terms of female entrepreneurs getting funded, and why?
Well, I feel for my own self at the moment that it's easier for women to get funding in today's world than it is for men. Now, that doesn't mean that there are the same amount of women going to get funding. I'm not sure precisely what those statistics are, but I know that there's been a big change in that men are really eager. Successful entrepreneurial men or VCs are really eager to invest in women-led startups. And so I think that I wouldn't be surprised in 5 years if there are many more, I mean, maybe not many more, but maybe 60% of ventures being led by women. Because I just think that there's a huge interest at the moment in making that happen.
Why do you think that is, though? Is that because there's an altruistic motive there where people just believe that we need to have a little bit better equality? Or is there just simply it's good business practice to have that type of mindset if you're somebody who's trying to fund businesses and you want, like, is it good PR or is it more than that?
I think there is a bit of it that's altruistic. And I would say, which people probably won't like to hear, that a large reason for it is the PR factor of it. It's required, I know, for a lot of large organizations these days to have female board members, and if they don't have them, to immediately go and find them. And so I think that there is a societal pressure, at least in North America, to make that happen. And so That's the number one reason. I do also believe that the statistics are now meeting out that women-led ventures are actually more likely to do better than male-led ones. So there's also a business reason, but that wasn't, I think, the catalyst for why that's happening.
Why do leaders of all mature businesses need to think differently heading into 2021? I know that's something that you've talked about a little bit.
Well, I think from a people standpoint, and this is literally just coming to my head now, I think they need to think differently about how they are treating their people and working with their people. I think so many people's ideas of what an appropriate work environment or work culture or how people work has changed, and major business leaders are going to have to address that. I know from some of my friends that their organizations are basically telling them that they can work at home indefinitely. Now, what is that going to mean for culture? This probably 3 or 4 months ago, maybe 5 months ago, felt like this would be somewhat of a flash in the pan time, and then things would go right back to normal. Obviously, that probably isn't going to be the case. And so what are leaders going to do to motivate their people, create a workplace culture when a third of their people are working from home? And then secondly, if they don't allow that and their people are angry about it, how are they going to address that? Because I have heard that some banks and things are insisting that their people start coming back.
I've spoken to a few people who've kind of worried openly about the impact that the pandemic might have on female entrepreneurs. And I've heard some data suggesting that women might be disproportionately affected by the work from home movement in an adverse way and maybe picking up some slack at home. Not that they should, but it's just maybe something that might be happening. But I'm wondering if that's just anecdotal data points that I'm collecting or if you've heard anything along those lines.
I have heard more in the sort of working woman capacity, people with jobs, not entrepreneurs, that it's been difficult, and I can understand why. I would say that, again, this would be a great time for any entrepreneur to start a business. And I think for women in particular, you know, no matter who the entrepreneur is, the same challenges exist. And so, you know, the things. You have to have a great idea, the ability to execute on it, and it'd be a differentiated product or idea, and there's a market for it. So that doesn't change for a man or a woman. And I think any entrepreneur, if they're really dedicated to an idea, will make it happen, whether they have to work 24 hours a day to make it happen.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, sadly, that is what you have to do. But at the very least, it's more rewarding when you wind up making it, right?
Right. Totally. I mean, I think to myself, when I graduated from business school, it was a terribly bad economy, 2003. And people were lucky to be going back to the jobs they had or the industries they had, much less going to new ones. And I had come from the film industry. And I thought, well, you know, it would be good for me to get the stamp of business approval that I've actually worked in a large company, maybe it'd be banking or private equity or consulting or something like that. And I couldn't even get any interviews, which was really, to me, terrible at the time. And like, why did I spend all this money on business school? I'm in debt. I'm not even getting interviews. But it ended up being a big blessing because I might have had, even still today, golden handcuffs if I got a job at a major private equity company or a hedge fund or something. But for me, it was a catalyst to go and start my own thing much, much sooner. And so while it felt bad at the time, it was actually a big boon for me.
While Victoria's perspective on women in the workforce seemed to be somewhat positive from my perspective, here's a counterpoint. I spoke to Lindsay Kaplan, co-founder of Chief, the private network for professional women, about how COVID hit working women particularly hard. Also, we talked about the double standards when it comes to how we treat male and female parents, and when she'll be satisfied in terms of women hitting equality in the workplace. Here's some of that talk with Lindsay.
There is data that shows that women are stepping back. And so this pandemic has disproportionately affected women and moms. And I say women, not just moms, because women are often caretakers of their parents, of people around them. And so it is absolutely hitting women in the workforce. And I think this is going to be detrimental for years to come to see how people are pausing their jobs. They're taking time off. They're leaning out of their day-to-day job. It is and I say this as a mom of two, it is absolutely impossible for me to be at the capacity I was at pre-pandemic. It's impossible. So it's tough on women. We know that they are disproportionately taking on more childcare, more housework. And so we as a society have to support and make sure that we are not discounting moms. We are not discounting anybody, any parent in the workplace that has to lean out a little bit to make sure that they're supporting their family through this ridiculous trash fire of the year.
Yeah, it's actually interesting just because my wife works and my work earlier in this year was a lot more flexible than hers. So there was a time where we fled New York and I was fully in charge of the kids basically for about an entire month and then just got little increments of work done when I could. And then I realized this is the position that a lot of women often find themselves in, where they're the person who takes the brunt of it, essentially, whenever anything happens in a family, but they're still, you know, they still have their professional obligations and they find a way to get it done. And not saying all women, but I think in general, there's a lot of just kind of toughness and grit that goes along with it and not complaining when you have to do more than your fair share.
Listen, I think there is more exception, and there is data that supports this, that when a man and women get to an equivalent high up place in their career, when a dad has to leave early for soccer practice, when a dad has pictures of his kids on his desk, there is a feeling of, wow, that guy, of course you have to leave early. What a great dad. And women don't have that benevolence associated with them taking time off for their kids, right? We're actually punished as, oh, she's not working hard enough. Oh, her job is second to her kids. And so we really have to step back and check our bias, the way we think about moms and dads. I always joke with my team, I never try to be a great mom. I try to be the world's best dad. And it usually gets a laugh, but there is a completely different set of expectations that we have as Americans around what a mom and a working mom is versus a working dad. And so we have to hold men and women to a similar standard as they parent and cut them both a similar amount of slack right now.
Anybody who has a high degree of confidence in themselves should want a level playing field, because if there's a level playing field and you come out on top, then you know without doubt that you deserve to be there, as opposed to the world that we have right now, where, you know, if you don't make it, you're not sure if you didn't make it for the right reasons. And if you're at the top, you're not sure if you're there for the right reasons.
You know, I think I will be satisfied that we've hit equality when I not only see equal representation in the room, but I see mediocre, not great women leaders. Because there's so many mediocre, meh leaders out there. And for women to get to the top, they have to be brilliant. They have to be amazing. The bar is so high. Bring me the B students. We can get just meh people to be leading companies that are women. That is how I know we have hit the place where I'm satisfied and we can pack up shop at Chief.
We're glad you joined us for this clip show. Check the show notes for the original episodes if you'd like to hear the whole conversations, of course. And if you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio, and assistant producers Aaron Cohen and Michelle Portnoy. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.